It is with great pleasure that we welcome singer-songwriter Bruce Cockburn to the KCT studios. We'll chat in just a bit, but first, Bruce, will you grace us with a song?
If you call it grace, here it is.
I'm sipping Florida Canyon lime juice. It's 3 a.m. Blow a fruit fly off the rim of my glass. The radio's playing Superchunk and the Friends of Dean Martinez. Midnight, it was bike tires whacking the potholes, milling humans, shivering energy glow, fusing the spaces between them with bar throb bass and laughter.
Live in the KCT studios, Bruce Cockburn. Thanks so much for taking the time to come back out to KCT studios. I believe I tried to tracked the exact year that you were here last time. It was 1997. And that was prior to your opening up the community concert hall at Fort Lewis College for the grand opening. So it's sort of coming back full circle now.
Yeah, there. Nice to be back.
Well, thanks again. And you've been making music for most of your life. Does the muse still speak to you as she did back in the day?
Oh, she kind of mutters away there. yeah, it's not something I take for granted, but the ideas still come. And, you know, we're hoping actually to do a new album this year. It would be later in the year. I've got maybe 8 new songs, and I need a few more before there's enough to make it worthwhile going in the studio. But, I mean, you can tell the generation I belong to because I'm talking about albums and how many songs you have before you go in the studio, et cetera, et cetera. But I still think of things in those terms. And an album's always seemed like a book to me. You know, the songs are kind of chapters in a book, and I have a hard time stepping away from that and thinking in terms of putting individual tracks out or whatever.
And like you said, they sort of serve as time capsules also. Like I think of your album, You've Never Seen Everything. That sort of chronicled a sort of a dark time in politics, and a lot of the songs on there were addressing those directly. And
yeah, and, you know, dark time in our politics. When are we not in a dark time in our politics?
Exactly.
But yeah, that was... the early in the Bush era, that album.
Yeah. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your songwriting process. And a listener called in just a couple days ago and requested the live version of Tibetan Side of Town off your full band live thing with Fergus Jimison Marsh and Michael Slosky back in the day. And I had played that, and I thought that was what might be a nice platform to use as sort of a discussion of where your music comes from. Is it lyrics first, music first? How do you approach that?
It's almost always lyrics first. Occasionally, very occasionally, they kind of come out almost at the same time. A song called All the Diamonds in the World is kind of an example of that. But most of the time, there's a lyric idea, and then that gets developed a bit. And when there's enough substance there to kind of think about music, then the music gets applied to it. The search for music's kind of a search for the right atmosphere in which to place those lyrics, you know. And so if it goes the other way, if I start with the guitar, it's liable to end up just being an instrumental piece.
Right. Well, the lyrics on that particular tune, you know, definitely plop the listener right down in that milieu. You know, I've never been there, but I almost feel like I have after hearing you sing about that, and the music just serves that so well, especially in that live version. I mean, the syncopation between you and the drummer Michael Slosky, while Fergus Jimison Marsh is doing that stick solo at the end, it still gives me chills when I hear that version of the song.
Yeah.
So
it was a good band.
Yeah. And now you're here on a solo tour. Are you going to be employing any kind of technological things like looping on any of your?
I use some effects, but I don't do looping.
No,
I don't know how. Actually, I mean, I know how to turn the machine on, but I've never really worked with that concept much. I've heard people do lovely things with it. I mean, Bill Frisell obviously comes to mind.
Right.
It's something. I play with echoes a bit, but it's a different thing from looping.
And your style of guitar playing is very, it's almost like a full band in itself, because you've got the bass line going underneath everything for the most part, a lot of the songs with that drone, with your thumb.
Yeah, there's a couple of different things, ways of approaching that. But I got that, of course, from my role models. But when I was first learning, not to play the guitar, but to kind of take it somewhere, the old blues guys who play various kinds of finger style. And it was also a conscious attempt, really, when I started songwriting to to create the effect of a band with the guitar. So there's some moving parts and something else going on besides strumming and a melody.
Right. And I know you, a lot of your tunes, it seems like you use sort of a variant on the quote-unquote Celtic tuning, the dadgad tuning, and...
I didn't know it was Celtic. I do that. I've done that a lot lately. I didn't use it for years and years, and in the beginning I was quite reluctant to use any kind of open tunings, beyond a certain very limited degree, because I kept hearing people who, as far as I could tell, hadn't really learned their instrument. They just learned to tune in different ways, and then they'd put their fingers in the same place and it would sound different, sort of. But it also sounds kind of blandly the same if that's how you approach it. I didn't want to get into that or get drawn into some kind of thing that I wasn't aware of like that. So I kind of stayed away from it. But over the years, I explored more and more, often just changing one string, lowering the G string to F sharp, which is what the guitar's in now, or changing the bass strings to get a particular bass note so I can play in a certain key, that kind of thing. But the dadgad tuning offers all kinds of interesting possibilities that it's been fun to explore.
Nice. Well, would you care to explore another song right now for us?
Yeah, I'm going to keep the same tuning, though, just because we could spend a lot of time while I
twanging away,
around trying to get everything to sound right. But this is a... song I wrote, I can't remember where I was when I exactly wrote it, but I got the idea in New York City years ago. At dusk in the winter, people are coming out of their offices and looking none too happy about it, and the song just kind of starts with that and goes where it goes. This is Rumors of Glory. Dark town, after the sun's gone down, two vapor trails cross the sky, catching the day's last slow goodbye. Black skyline looks rich as velvet. Something is shining like gold, but better rumors of glory. Rumors of glory. Smiles mixed with curses. The crowd disperses. About whom no details are known. Each one alone, yet not alone. Behind the pain, fear etched on the faces, something is shining like gold, but better rumors of glory. Of glory.
what humans can be. And in that distance, some tension's born. Energy surging like a storm. You plunge your hand in, you draw it back, scorched beneath its shining like gold. The better rumors of glory, rumors of glory, rumors of glory, rumors of glory.
Live in the KCT studios, Bruce Cockburn with Rumors of Glory. And Bruce, your memoir, of course, borrowed the title from that song.
Mm-hmm.
And you also have a box set, a pretty comprehensive retrospective of your career with that same title. And that I didn't know it had a live DVD, actually, and a disc of rarities also. So added value on that box set.
Well, yeah, the intent behind the box set was to put all the songs that are mentioned in the book together.
Excellent.
So if somebody was interested enough and feeling foolish enough with their money to buy the box set, they could kind of go through and experience the songs as they were reading the descriptions of them, or the background of them and so on in the book, or the context in which they happen. So, yeah, people have responded well to it. But it also, we had these various rarities, so-called, and the little concert film. So the concert film is essentially the same tour as a live album that came out a few years back called Slice of Life. So it's not a brand new thing, but it does a good job of capturing me solo at that time.
And speaking of DVDs, you've got some that chronicle some of your globetrotting to places like Mali and return to Nepal. And do you still get around the globe as much as you used to?
No, in the recent years, not. The last time we went anywhere exciting like that was probably the return to Nepal trip. I mean, I've been some exciting places since then, but I have a 4-year-old daughter, and I'm tending to stay at home when I can these days.
Understandable.
Then go for that other kind of adventure, because there's quite a lot of adventure attached to having a 4-year-old. At least at my age, anyway. But yeah, that trip to Nepal was in 2007. Before Iona was born, my wife and I were able to sort of take holidays here and there. So we spent a week in Jerusalem at one point. We spent a week in Barcelona. I was in Venezuela for the elections that legitimized Chavez basically as the president of that country. I was part of an unofficial observer team for that. And so, yeah, there have been a few interesting things that have happened, but in the last 4 years, very little of that.
Domestic adventures.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. I noticed you've got, aside from your official website, brucecockburn.com, which is, I might add, been recently revamped and relaunched, you've also got fan-supported sites. I think it's really cool. There's Bruce Cockburn Project and Gavin's Woodpile. Do you have a lot of direct input onto those, or
none? I'm acquainted with the people to some extent. I'm Daniel Keebler, who runs the Gavin's Woodpile site, has become a friend over the many years that he's been interested in my stuff, and he's. But both those entities are very, very helpful. I mean, for a long time, when my website was garbage, basically. It's the dumbest website in the whole internet. The Cockburn Project in particular performed a really helpful function getting information out there about touring and all that sort of stuff. Daniel's done a great job, too, digging up old things and odd things. And he started out publishing a newsletter, like a fanzine kind of newsletter, and things would turn up in there. He used to send it to me, and there'd be interviews with somebody I played with, you know, in 1965. And it was quite revealing, actually, quite an eye-opener to revisit the past from somebody else's perspective like that.
Very cool. Well, what type of music is catching your ear these days? Are you a listener? I know some musicians that come through here, they tend not to to listen when they're, you know, when they're creating and doing their own thing.
I go back and forth on that. I mean, not by design, but just circumstantially. I don't listen to very much music of late. I listen to the radio when I'm in the car. Pretty much that's it. And I'm living in San Francisco these days, so there's a bunch of good radio stations, interesting ones, a couple of NPR ones, and a couple of independent ones that will have a combination of interesting talk and interesting music, and jazz stations that play real jazz that, you know, is not so not that soft kind of stuff that I'm getting creepy feelings thinking
that
about.
Oozes out of the speakers.
Yeah. I mean, there's some good playing in that genre, but it's not for me.
Yeah.
But there's some good radio. So, you know, I hear a lot of stuff when I'm driving, but most of the time I don't get to hear who it is if it's something I'm not familiar with, because I'm not lucky enough to be still tuned in when the announcer will, you know, run through the list of tunes and artists. But once in a while I hear some amazing things. But I listen to a lot of jazz, probably. I mean, the biggest single component of the listening I do is that.
And I know you had your stint back at Berklee in the day, and then decided that wasn't for you, and I guess that was probably the right decision.
Well, it feels like that with hindsight, yeah. It seemed to have worked out okay. Yeah. And then, you know, 30 years later, they gave me an honorary doctorate anyway. So
there you go. Yeah. Didn't have to put in all the time.
I'm addressing all this graduating class of these poor kids who had to work their butts off to get to this point, and, you know, I'm a dropout. Well, but there was a certain irony there.
Yeah. Well, here's sort of a loaded question, but as a Canadian and an observer of American politics, would you care to comment on this current election cycle here
in
the States?
As a Canadian who lives in this country and I'm here on a green card, I can't vote. I'm what's called a resident alien, which is a term I relish, actually. But I have a very strong interest in what goes on here, you know, a little more personal than it was when I was not a resident here. And I certainly have opinions about it. to me, the goings on this, from a Canadian perspective, the whole primary process is obscure and kind of hard to really grasp the sense of. But we see it happen, and I don't know how anybody can straight-facedly call themselves a Republican at this point. I mean, I know honorable Republicans. I've met lots of people of that persuasion that I thought were great people, and that, you know, we disagree on this or that or the other thing. But and I guess if I were voting in this country, I'd vote Democrat, kind of no matter who it was, because that other field is a little more than a little disturbing. But it's kind of shocking, actually, that where it's gone. But, you know, where it's gone has gotten enough media coverage. We don't really need to dwell on it, I guess.
Yes, well, I appreciate you taking the shot at that because, yeah, it is, I mean, antics is too kind a word for a lot of that stuff that's happening these days.
Antics can be amusing, but this is the implications of these antics are profound and severe.
Disturbing. Yeah,
very, very. There's no good to be found there that I can see.
Right. But. Well, I'd like to end on a happy note. So can you play us out on a
happy
tune?
Song, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking of a song called "World of Wonders." If I can just get my hands around it here. Somewhere a saxophone slides through changes like a wet pipe dripping down my neck. Gives me a chill, sounds like danger, but I can't stop moving till I cross this sector of this world of wonder.
Sun going down, line of black hills.
Thank you so much. Bruce Coburn, live in the KSUT studios. Safe travels, Bruce, and we'll see you tomorrow night.
Great. Thanks a lot.